Our friend Estelle visited medium after medium, seeking to influence them to address her parents. She attended circle after circle. In order to gain experience in spiritual control, she devoted her time to this work, and the months rolled on, bringing no satisfaction with them, only increased sorrow and gloom to the earthly home, and sadness to the waiting, watching spirit, who could only exert just influence enough over her paternal parent to prevent him from becoming insane outright. At length, through the agency of a kindly spirit, Estelle came in contact with a poor and humble working woman of about 22 years of age, and after a few experiments found herself able to sway the thoughts and control the actions of this person as she desired. One morning, this woman awoke with a strange feeling of depression. The thought of going to work in the great mill where she was accustomed to labor seemed more than ever distasteful, while the idea of taking a holiday for herself appeared very alluring to her. After an early breakfast, dressed in her Sabbath clothes, she emerged from her boarding house, but, in place of turning toward the mill, walked in the opposite direction toward the heart of the town, and wandered hither and thither, scarce knowing for what? The recognition and ITS results. It was nearly noon of the same day, when Estelle's mother hastily entered her husband's library and requested him to come out into the garden, for a strange person had been found within the gate who was acting in a very unaccountable manner. The husband passed out into the garden followed by his wife, and found our mill hand seated by the side of a rose vine, which had been a favorite of his daughter. Her eyes were closed, and her hands lay folded in her lap, but at the approach of the bear she stretched them out and said, "Oh, father, father, don't you know me? I am your little Estelle, whom you thought had left you. I have not died. I am here with you, to bring to you and darling mother my love. Don't you know how you used to call me a pet, and a chicky, and you're a blue-eyed belle? Oh, father, I am so glad to come to you, and tell you what a happy home is awaiting you and mother with me." The man and woman were astounded. They knew not what to say. They had heard of spiritualism, but had never attempted an investigation of it, and, therefore, did not understand what to do with this strange being. However, she continued to speak, relating story after story of the early life of their child, until at length the mist seemed to clear away from the father's brain, and he accepted the joyful truth that his child was before him, not in her own material form, but in control of the organism of one who was a perfect stranger to all parties. I cannot continue these interesting details, suffice it to say that, when Spirit Estelle loosened her control of the medium stranger, her parents were both bathed in happy, joyful tears. The father of the spirit questioned the strange woman, who was in a perfect tumult of amazement, incredulity, and wonder at her surroundings and the strange story related to her. Her humble history was soon told, and investigation proved its truth. In a short time, this slowly working woman was invited to make her home with Estelle's parents, she to receive a liberal compensation as companion and medium for them. The generous offer was accepted, and today she is an honored inmate of that happy home, where, when evening's shadows fall, Estelle makes her daily visit, to impart instruction and information concerning the heavenly life to her listening parents, and to shower their hearts with loving benedictions, which purify and bless their souls. No longer is the mother sad and despairing, no longer is the father bitter and misanthropical, peace and joy have become inmates of their household. No longer is the humble medium friendless and alone, a beautiful home and friendly, loving attention are hers. No longer does Estelle sorrow and repine, but she returns from the spiritual world day by day to accomplish her work of guiding her dear ones home to the better land. Chapter 8. An Echo from the Summerland. The Summerland is so near to this mundane sphere of yours, my friends, that I am often led to question why it is you cannot often hear the sounds of its busy, active life. But I know that the din and bustle, the cares, turmoils, and perplexities of mortal existence have dulled your hearing, and sealed your senses to the beautiful, internal, ever new life and activities of the spiritual universe, and that only in a few instances can you sense the presence and power of invisible, potent beings. But I have to record one instance of perception of spiritual things, that I may term an echo from the Summerland, an echo that brought music, heart ease and peace to two weary, suffering human hearts, yet encased in the temple of flesh. Recently a rare case of suffering and devotion has come to my knowledge. A woman, young in years, yet a mother and widow, was struggling on in spite of want, poverty, and pain, seeking to earn a subsistence for her two children, grew weary, faint, and exhausted, when her little ones were taken from her without a moment's warning, and hurried into the spirit world by what you of earth call an accident. They were together at play, when an embankment caved in and buried them beneath its ruins. The poor mother was nearly wild with grief. She became ill, and in a little time it was found that she could never see again. The shock to her system, together with previous exhaustion from overwork, had paralyzed the optic nerve, and she was blind. Upon a lower floor of the humble tenement where this poor woman lived dwelt another, a noble soul, one who had seen better days, but had also been brought to a condition of extreme poverty by the hand of adversity. This was a poor, middle-aged woman, who was employed as night nurse at a public hospital in the city. She had always presented a kindly, friendly manner to the widow and her children, but nothing of a special nature had been observed. Suddenly, however, as the terrible catastrophe that hurled the two children into eternity occurred, this woman seemed to arouse to the distress of her neighbor, and when it was found that the poor woman was ill and in need, all the heroism of her nature was called forth. She hastened to the bedside of the suffering one, nursed and attended to her wants with rare devotion, neglected her own comfort for the sake of her neighbor, and finally gave up her situation at the hospital, in order to be with her at all times her presence was required. At the time of the accident, as the situation of the poor mother became known, a few sympathetic persons contributed certain sums of money for her relief, but in a little while these became exhausted, and she was again penniless. Then did the kind nurse take prompt action. Not content with caring for the sufferer, she brought her down to her own more comfortable apartments, shared her little store with her while it lasted, and watched and tended her like a mother caring for a well-loved child. But the invalid was unhappy, aye, wildly unhappy. Her children dead, her home broken up, herself bereft of sight, a weak, miserable wreck of her former self, dependent upon the bounty of another, and that other a poor woman, almost a stranger, eh, what had she left to live for? Surely nothing, she thought, and daily she longed and prayed for death to come to her deliverance. Before a great while, however, the slender resources of our nurse had given out. Then it was that she sought and obtained a kind of cheap needlework that she could take home, and at the same time attend to the wants of her charge. These were dark days. Poverty, hunger, and cold sometimes stared them in the face, but still the noble woman faltered not in her labors of love, nor ceased to speak cheeringly and encouragingly to the helpless invalid she had chosen to burden herself with. The lesson of self-sacrifice. Let me here pause to comment upon the noble, self-sacrificing spirit of this humble nurse. Impecunious herself, she could yet find something to spare for another, but far more than this, she could deprive herself of the necessities of life, and devote her time, attention and care to one who had no claim upon her, save as she appealed to the sympathies of a tender soul. Risking want and suffering for herself, she gave up her only means of support in order to be able to care for that other, and finally took that other into her own home, shared with her her own little all, depriving herself of health, strength, and much that makes life bearable, to comfort and sustain her charge. Can human love do more than this? Is spirit love more tender, more self-denying, more beautiful? The Nazarene said, "As ye have done it unto one of the least of these, ye have done it unto me," and again, "Greater love hath no man than this, that he lay down his life for another." But better than the sacrifice of life is the constant denial of self, that continually blesses another at the expense of the individual. Oh, spiritualists, heed the lesson of this woman's work as revealed to you in these pages, heed it well, For by such labors is the soul brought into communion with the angels and fitted to enjoy the blessings of heavenly life. There are thousands of human hearts pining for someone to love, and for someone to love them, would they but look around them, and take an active, sympathetic interest in their fellow creatures, they would speedily find someone to love, and would win a soul's affection in return. Days of darkness. The days sped away, bringing only poverty and want to the little humble home. The brave woman fought nobly to keep the A-wolf from the door, but with ill success. The invalid still lay exhausted, weak and sightless, a helpless burden, constantly pining for a release that did not come. Dark and dreary seemed the days before them, friends they had none, and their neighbors took no notice of them. Still the brave nurse resisted the sick woman's plea to be sent away. Well did she know that unkindness and neglect would become the portion of that suffering one. Did she heed her request, and so she struggled on until the hour of which I write. It would seem that human distress could go no further. It had been a day of suffering untold. Hunger, cold, and darkness settled down upon that little home, as the shades of night closed in upon a dreary March day. The last morsel of food had disappeared. The last stick of wood burned the day before. Silence fell upon the inmates of that little room, for their anxiety and care were too great for words. A sense of feeling like despair settled upon their hearts. It seemed that the burden of life was too great to be borne. Words of cheer from the spirit land. Suddenly, through the stillness and darkness, there came a faint, sweet sound of children's voices. Like a far-off echo from some unseen land it fell, swelling louder and louder, until the tones could be distinctly heard, and these words sung in chorus floated upon the quiet atmosphere of that little room, made holy by the spirit of tender love and abnegation. We come from the summer land, our earthly friends to greet, we come a happy, joyous band, with blessings pure and sweet, we bring you peace from heaven above, where sorrows never come, we call your spirits with our love to their eternal home. A hush of holy quiet now fell upon the tortured hearts of the two women. Peace indeed entered their souls, for in those angelic tones they recognized familiar voices, and the one, those of her two children, who had been so recently snatched away from her. The other, that of a beautiful boy who, years before, at the tender age of 4 years, had been called home to the angels, leaving her almost crazed with pain and grief. The instance here recorded was the first echo our friends caught from the summerland, nothing more, nothing less than that one little verse sang in the familiar tones of their departed children, and which were recognized as those of the voices of loved ones gone before. Want of space compels me to be brief with my narrative. I must not dwell on the long, hard, cold winter which these two women were called upon to endure. I will only state that on the day following the blessed evening that brought such great comfort and peace to their weary hearts, our good nurse succeeded in finding a little work, which continued from time to time, and yielded just enough income to purchase the plainest necessities of life. Many times did these two women feel the pangs of hunger and cold. Many times during that relentless winter did they almost despair of keeping life in the body, but after events proved these bitter experiences to have been refining, spiritualizing, and unfolding to their natures. For 2 months after the spiritual experience which I have recorded occurred, nothing more was heard or felt of a like character, yet the memory of that one beautiful hour lingered in the hearts of those women, and caused them often to speak in rejoicing tones of it. But at last the time came when our poor, sightless invalid began to hear whispered words and sweet sounds, lights of golden and azure hue flitted before her eyes, and finally she beheld smiling faces and shining forms, first those of her dear children and departed husband, then others that she recognized as those of dear ones who had passed from earth life years before, and, at length, strange individuals, whom she did not know, yet who smiled upon her, bringing her messages of encouragement, hope and cheer. Her faithful companion and friend had become obliged to leave the invalid daily for a few hours, in order to earn the trifle which she could obtain by menial service to others, And it was during these lonely hours that she beheld the glowing forms and listened to the spirit utterances of which I write. Many an evening then did the two women spend in happiness together, the one in relating her pleasant spiritual experiences of the day, the other in listening eagerly to them, and though cold and hunger sometimes nipped them severely, yet there were no two happier beings in all that large city, for they had spiritual meat to eat, which others knew not of. In describing some of the strange visitants who came to her, and mentioning the words they uttered, our invalid was delighted to find that they were recognized by her companion, and now a double joy was theirs, for through the unfolded medial powers of one, both were enabled to hold sweet and loving communion with their dear ones in the spirit world. The mists clearing away. It was a clear, cold Sabbath day in March. Our friends were seated together in their humble room, conversing on spiritual things, when a rap upon the door of their apartment startled them, for visitors they had none, and in answer to the invitation come in, a lady, clothed in heavy and costly apparel, entered. The lady proved to be the wife of a wealthy spiritualist. She had been directed to this humble abode by the spirit of her child, who had told her, through a medium, that there she would find manifold evidences of spirit existence, and a medium of great power, poor and unknown, in need of assistance. The events proved these statements to be true, for hardly had the lady entered than the medium beheld a bright light shining all around, and standing in this light were many spirits who spoke their names to her, and whispered messages of hope, coupled with words and sentences concerning their identity, and a power she could not withstand impelled her to describe those spirits and to repeat their words aloud. The visitor wept for joy at receiving such tokens of spirit power and presence. She recognized the spirits, both by their description and words, and for a time it seemed as though heaven had descended to earth, and was chiefly known in that almost barren home. You may be sure the lady insisted on paying the poor, blind woman liberally for her services as medium that day, and departed promising to visit her again in a short time. And not only did she keep her promise, but sent her friends to the poor woman to receive a spiritual baptism. Not one went away disappointed, all were gratified with what they received, and paid for it with willing hearts. At length the visitors became so numerous that the good nurse found herself obliged to remain at home to attend to her charge and those who came daily. Instead of the spiritual power lessening, it seemed to increase, and the medium grew strong and happy. All care of the morrow passed away, and the two friends now began to reap the harvest of their weary watching and patient trust in God. Our good nurse found sweet compensation for all her hours of toil, self-denial and sacrifice, for she had not only someone to love and to love her, but the daily companionship of angels, and likewise the comforts that material means can furnish. In a short time, our friends were enabled to remove from their humble abode to a neat brick house in the heart of the city, which they furnished with taste and an eye to comfort. Here business grew and thrived. Here the two women lived and blessed each other, the one by providing means of existence, as well as imparting spiritual light, the other in tender helpfulness and care for her companion. And today these two individuals reside in one of your large cities, honored and respected by all who know them. The spiritual work goes on, the medium has never regained her sight, but she is no longer the pale, emaciated, despairing being she once was. Angel friends have saved her from a living death, and she delights to impart their blessing unto others. She has never been obliged to advertise for business, for she has all she can attend to, and it is not for the wealthy alone she seeks, for many a poor soul has received spiritual bounty from her, without money and without price, while it is the delight of our dear old nurse, strong and hearty in her well-doing, to minister to the bodily comforts of those who are in needy circumstances. Occasionally she, too, listens to the sound of angel voices, and it makes her heart rejoice, but her grand work seems to be in caring for others. Chapter 9. The Fortunes of Little Georgie. A child, young, fair, and innocent, lay dying among the pillows of a snowy couch in the upper room of a large and spacious house, are the only child of wealthy parents, whose hearts seemed breaking under the necessity of giving their loved one up to death. A. For these parents had no idea or knowledge of the spirit world, and the power of its inhabitants to return to earth and to minister to their friends. All that skill could do or love suggest had been tried for the recovery of their one ewe lamb, but all in vain. Slowly and surely the change was stealing upon him, and in a little while his spirit had joined the angel band. Out in the chilly streets, not far from the stately mansion of which I have written, another child, as young and fair and innocent as the first, sat shivering with cold, and trembling with hunger. What was to be his fate? Who could tell? This was the offspring of poor, respectable parents. The father had passed to the spirit world, the mother had earned her bread by hard labor, until an attack of acute bronchial trouble threatened her life, and she had been taken to the hospital for treatment, where she still lingered, battling with disease, while her little boy, uncared for and alone, sat in the street, or roamed about, picking up a bit here and there as best he could, returning at night to the humble room he had always called home, to throw himself upon his lily bed and weep himself to sleep. You may ask, in doubt, can such things be? Are such things allowed in a Christian land? And we answer, yes, here in your boasted civilized country, little children, the pride and flowers of humanity, are permitted to struggle up through poverty, hunger, cold, and misery, and then you wonder at the existence of crime, the spread of evil. Shadows on earthly paths. The child of the wealthy parents passed to the higher life, leaving that elegant home lonely and desolate, and those parents' hearts sad and sorrowful. The mother of the little street waif also passed on to the other world, leaving her beloved boy homeless and destitute, for the authorities, finding that the woman was no more, sent to her former home to ascertain the whereabouts of her friends. The neighbors could tell the messenger nothing, only that there was a little boy of about 8 years, but they had seen nothing of him of late. Of the woman they knew little, she had been a hard-working, decent body, who minded her own business and did not talk much. Concluding a without taking the trouble to investigate the matter or that the child had been taken care of by someone who knew its mother, the city authorities ordered the burial of her remains, stripped her former abode of its humble possessions, and when in the coldness and darkness of night the child crept home to his bed, he found the door locked, and himself unable to gain admittance. And thus it happened that he wandered off, until, faint and weary, he sank down upon a door stone, where he was found by a night watchman and taken to the nearest station. Having been warmed and fed, our little waif told his story. He was then given a place to sleep, and in the morning taken to a charitable institution for children, and left in charge of its matron. Just 3 weeks after these events, a wealthy farmer arriving from a western city visited the institution in search of a boy to accompany him home and learn to do chores on the farm. Our friend Georgie was selected to accompany him, and after giving the references required by the institution concerning his character and ability to care for the child, the stranger departed, taking the little one with him. But arriving at his destination, it transpired that the man of wealth had not taken the child into his own service, but had brought him from the east to deliver into the hands of a neighbor of his, a hard, grasping, relentless man, who proved to be a most terrible and heartless taskmaster to our little boy, whose life now became one of drudgery and abject servitude. Time passed, the health of the child began to suffer severely under the severe treatment received. This only served to harden his master toward him. It seemed that death must soon come to his release, when an event happened which changed the entire life of the boy, and brought him under conditions favorable for the growth of his hitherto stunted powers, as well as for the unfoldment of happiness within him. We are not unmindful of the work of the spirit, in this case, the work of many spirits. The poor mother who had breathed her earthly life away upon a hospital cot had joined her husband and found a sweet home in the spirit world, but she had not forgotten her little, homeless boy on earth, and it was now her purpose and her mission, aided by her companion, to work early and late for that child's welfare. With sorrowful hearts did they watch over their loved one, With anguished feelings did they behold the misery of his daily life, caused and promoted by the severity of his cruel master, and it was with the greatest anxiety that they sought to guard him from evil, and to guide his spirit in the path of right. A spirit mother leads her child. At length, one calm summer evening, about 8 months after the child had been taken to the West, and placed in the power of his keeper, our little boy was made happy by a sight of his dear mother. It had been a day of unusual hardship. A work too heavy for him to perform had been given him to do, and when he broke down under it he had been met with blows and curses. Smarting under the infliction, he had crept away to his humble room, beneath the eaves of the old house, and, throwing himself upon the lowly bed, had sobbed himself to sleep. It was yet early evening, when our little boy suddenly awoke, to behold the well-remembered face of his mother beaming upon him, and to hear her well-known voice saying, "Come, my darling, you have remained here too long, I cannot see you suffer under the power of your cruel master another day, follow me, and God will take care of you." The child, bewildered and but half awake, not doubting but that his mother had found him, and had come to take him away, for he had never realized that she was dead, arose from his low couch and softly followed the spirit form as it glided from the room and down the stairs, out into the cool, sweet dusk of a summer evening. In the glimmering twilight he stumbled on, still following that form which he believed to be his mother's, yet half awed and somewhat frightened that it did not speak, but only seemed to glide along as though barely touching the ground over which it passed. By and by, the wandering child heard the noise and bustle of a large city, not yet settled into the quietude of night, but he lost sight of the form which had led him such a long distance, and realized that he was alone. What a situation for a child of 9 years to be in, alone in all the world, homeless and friendless, a waif upon the wide sea of humanity. But do you for a moment imagine that the good spirits had deserted this little one? Ah, no. Hopeless, helpless, and alone. The child sank down by the roadside. The night was warm, the stars gleamed above his head, he was footsore, tired and lame, from his long and wearisome journey. Soon he fell into a troubled slumber. His head rolled from side to side, and he moaned in his sleep. In this condition he was found by a passing traveller, a gentleman of business, who was journeying to his home in the suburbs of the city, not far away. Not having the heart to leave the child alone, and knowing of no habitation near at hand, this gentleman determined to convey him to his own home, and as he was travelling by carriage, this was easily accomplished. Upon reaching his destination, the little boy was kindly received and tenderly cared for by Mrs. Webster, the wife of the gentleman who had found him, and her sister-in-law, Mrs. Harris, who, in company with her husband, was visiting this region from their home in the East. The terrible hardships which little Georgie had undergone for months, together with the mental and physical strain of that one night's journey, left him stranded upon a bed of sickness, which lasted many weeks, during which time he knew nothing of what was taking place around him. But careful nursing and skillful treatment at length triumphed over the dangerous fever, and the child once more awoke to life and consciousness. We must now leave our little orphan in the care of the kind friends who had found him, and return to the eastern city from which he had been taken by the western farmer. Our readers will remember that about the time little Georgie wandered friendless and alone throughout the city's streets while his mother lay ill in the public hospital, a young child, fair and innocent, lay dying in a sumptuously furnished chamber of an uptown residence. Mr. and Mrs. Harris were religious people, they attended a respectable and fashionable church, listened to the teachings of their pastor, and believed the Bible to be unqualifiedly the Word of God. But in the hour of their bereavement they found no relief, no consolation in these things. Theirs was utter and profound sadness. Visions of the night. The lady's health, never robust, began to fail. She became easily wrought upon by her surroundings, and sensitive to the slightest influence brought to bear upon her. The nervous system was pronounced prostrated by her attending physician, who recommended a change of scene and associations for her benefit. At times, while her mortal senses were locked in slumber, Mrs. Harris would behold the face of her little boy, and hear his well-known tones calling to her in words of love. So real did these visions seem to the lady that she could hardly believe them to be dreams. Aldor Ufo, as she said to her husband while relating them to him, her common sense told her that they could be nothing else. Weeks passed away, Mrs. Harris dreamed on, drawing comfort and peace from the nightly visits of her spirit child. The visions became stronger and clearer, other forms than that of her little boy were sometimes seen, and other voices than his mingled in her ears.